This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, Cincinnati joins the list of sanctuary cities in the U.S. But first, some cancers can be easily detectable in their early stages, but that's not the case with pancreatic cancer. It often goes undetected until it's advanced and difficult to treat. Last year, more than 53,000 Americans were diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and close to 42,000 died from it. Here to discuss pancreatic cancer and the latest research on the disease, our director of the Division of Surgical Oncology at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine and director of the Gastrointestinal Center and the Pancreatic Disease Center at the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Syed Ahmad, assistant professor in the UC College of Medicine Department of Radiation Oncology and a member of the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Jordan Carofa, and assistant professor in the UC College of Medicine Department of Internal Medicine, Division of Hematology, Oncology, and a member of the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Anu Gupta. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Anu, Syed, and Jordan, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Our pleasure.
Syed, what is pancreatic cancer? How does this disease actually get started?
So first, to answer that question, you have to understand what the pancreas is. A pancreas is an organ that's vital. It is behind the stomach in the upper abdomen and has two main functions. Function number one is it helps produce enzymes that is utilized to digest and absorb food. And function number two is involved in glucose homeostasis, or controlling your blood sugars and keeping it in a tightly controlled range. Many different types of pancreas cancer can exist. For example, the most common type is called adenocarcinoma. It's also referred to as ductal adenocarcinoma. And it probably, when we say pancreas cancer, we're talking about adenocarcinoma, but there are other types of cancers that can exist as well, such as neuroendocrine tumors. For example, Steve Jobs, everyone knows that he died of pancreas cancer, but he had a neuroendocrine tumor, which is a much more rare form, and the way it behaves is also differently. But typically when we talk about pancreas cancer, we're talking about pancreas ductal adenocarcinoma.
What makes it so difficult to detect this disease in early stages? Why is it so difficult to track down?
There are no symptoms that people present with when it's in early stages. So, for example, people think about getting things checked out if they are symptomatic, if they're having abdominal pain or if they are having nausea, vomiting, symptoms. Pancreatic cancer is very silent in its early stages, meaning it doesn't really have any symptoms associated with it until it's widespread, most likely stage four, and that's when you tend to see it come to clinical presentation.
So because it's starting at the cellular level, so it's starting at a very, very small level where you might not notice it.
Very insidiously.
So it's also, remember, in terms of what I was saying earlier, it's located in a hidden part of the abdomen. So it's not near anything else where it can irritate something to cause a symptom. And typically, one of the most common presentations of pancreas cancer is jaundice. And the reason that can occur is the pancreas cancer grows to a certain diameter, which causes blockage of the bile tube that connects the liver to the intestine and prevents the bile from entering the intestine. The bile spills into the blood, and the person gets yellow, jaundiced. And that's the first presentation. But sometimes a more subtle symptoms that can occur, such as abdominal pain, weight loss, and in some situations maybe difficult to control blood sugar levels, some nonspecific symptoms, but in the early stages, it's basically silent, and it doesn't really present itself until it gets to a certain size or if it spreads and causes blockage of the bile tube.
Yeah, and unfortunately, about 80% of patients will present with the cancer having already spread.
How long, Jordan, is it usually between when it starts and when it's detected? Is this a fast-moving cancer, or is it a slower cancer?
It's a really good question, and it's a common question that patients ask. And in reality, it's probably something that's been there many, many, months, if not years. It takes a long time for a cell to turn cancerous and grow to a size where you have enough cells that actually you can see it on a scan, or that it spreads and causes symptoms. So it's a really long process, actually.
Mm-hmm. How deadly a cancer is this, Syed?
So pancreas cancer is, unfortunately, one of the more aggressive types of cancers that we deal with. In the United States, it's, in terms of incidence, it's in the top 10. But in terms of causing mortality or death from cancer, it's in the top 4 among men and women. So it is one of the more deadly cancers that we deal with. In fact, there are some estimates that within the next decade, pancreas cancer will be the number 2 cause of cancer-related deaths in the United States. So it's a deadly cancer.
Mm. And like you were saying, Anu, it's insidious. It's tough to pick up on and detect in its early stages. So I assume the sooner you can catch it, the better your chances of surviving will become.
That's right. And I think Dr. Ahmad can also speak more to that as a surgeon. But in early stages, it is treatable, and also there's a potential for cure. And we have had patients like that at our center where we were able to detect their cancer early on, or they came to clinical presentation at a much earlier stage. And with treatment are now cancer-free. So certainly there is that possibility.
Do we know what causes pancreatic cancer?
Like most cancers, pancreas cancer is a very heterogeneous group of diseases. We have this catchphrase cancer, but every pancreas cancer is different. There are subtypes of pancreas cancer that's caused by environmental factors. We know that smokers have a 4-time higher risk of developing pancreas cancer than non-smokers. There are certain types of diet that's been linked with higher incidence of pancreas cancer, high fatty food diet, red meats. And then there are genetic factors as well. There are certainly hereditary causes that can be associated with pancreas cancer. There are syndromes that are associated with pancreas cancer, like BRCA gene mutation, which many people will link to breast cancer formation, but can also cause pancreas cancer. And unfortunately, majority of time, we don't know what caused it. It's a mutation that occurred in that individual that led to this disease. And you know, when we try to determine a single factor that caused it, oftentimes we don't have an answer. But it's a heterogeneous group of diseases with many factors that can be associated with increasing the incidence. But the one factor we know that we can intervene on is smoking, healthy lifestyle, healthy diet.
Okay. Hey, can pancreatitis lead to pancreatic cancer?
Yes, pancreatitis is one of those factors that can increase the incidence of pancreas cancer. Now, the many types of pancreatitis, there's acute pancreatitis and there's chronic pancreatitis. And chronic pancreatitis is more of a permanent injury to the pancreas. And when you have scarring to the pancreas, that can increase long-term risk of pancreas cancer. So pancreatitis can increase the risk of pancreas cancer. And then there's some genes that can cause both pancreatitis and pancreas cancer. There's a gene called the PRSS mutation that causes both.
So who's most likely to develop? Are there certain groups of people that are more susceptible to developing pancreatic cancer?
I think it gets back to these factors we just listed, all of these modifiable risk factors, smoking, unhealthy diet. Patients that engage in these are at a higher risk, and certainly the genetically unfavorable familial subtypes carry that inherently in their DNA, so they're at a higher risk for pancreas cancer.
But in North America, if you look at the subtype of or the breakdown of people who get it, it's going to be African Americans unfortunately have a higher incidence of pancreas cancer. Males have a higher incidence of pancreas cancer, and typically pancreas cancer occurs in the 7th and 8th decade of life, so in their 60s and 70s.
So how is it detected? I mean, what are the means of actually looking for it and diagnosing it?
Many times it really depends on where in the pancreas the cancer is. If it's near the head of the pancreas where the bile duct is, patients will present with jaundice, and this can sometimes be painless jaundice. That is a really common presentation where maybe even a family member, a coworker will notice, gosh, you look yellow, you need to get checked out, and then that person would go to their family doctor, get labs drawn, would find they have elevated bilirubin, and that would lead to a series of imaging tests, like a CT scan, where you can then identify a mass in the pancreas, which ultimately leads to a biopsy, and then you have the definitive diagnosis.
When you're talking about jaundice, Jordan, it can be yellowing of the skin.
Yellowing of the eyes, typically.
Eyes, typically,
the white part of your eyes is what people would notice.
Okay. And now, a lot of people might look at this and say, boy, it can't be detected early. It almost sounds like it's an automatic death sentence. Is that the case anymore?
I think cancer is a very serious illness, no doubt about that. But I think over the years, the treatments, and specifically treatments with chemotherapy and radiation techniques, as well as surgical techniques, have all come a long way. And because of that, I think the treatment paradigm has changed, and that has also led to improved outcomes in terms of people being able to live longer after getting this diagnosis.
How is it typically treated?
So typically, in general terms, we utilize radiation, surgery, and chemotherapy to treat this type of cancer.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And are we doing better at detecting it? Are we getting to the point where we're improving in that area?
Absolutely. So I think the first thing to understand is that there's a greater awareness of the disease, and there have been lots of community groups that have kind of raised awareness, like PANCAN, which is a national organization, Pancreas Cancer Action Network, and they've devoted their time and attention resources to raising the awareness of the existence of this cancer. And the other thing that has happened is that there's been a lot of famous people who've been diagnosed with pancreas cancer that have been in the media, and that's raised awareness for pancreas cancer. So now, not only are patients thinking of that as a diagnosis of their symptoms, but physicians are now entertaining those early diagnose these symptoms as in a way to diagnose as early. Oftentimes, patients have these nonspecific symptoms, and they go for months and months and months before someone actually thinks of, you know, maybe it's pancreas cancer, maybe we should do a CT scan. Now that there's a greater awareness when these symptoms occur, people are getting these imaging studies quicker. And so, yes, we're doing a better job of detecting these things earlier.
Is there any kind of a regular screening that people can get as part of a physical exam?
Unfortunately, there really hasn't been a valid screening test for pancreas cancer to date. There are certain populations that are at higher risk, the genetically at-risk patients, where they have special screening protocols. Some patients will get MRI scans. But in a general population, we unfortunately don't have yet a valid screening test. There's a lot of interest in this. There's a lot of research going on in that area.
What about a blood test for it? Does a blood test exist for this type of cancer?
No, not at this point.
Wow.
There has been interest in developing blood tests similar to like a PSA that, you know, men often have done to screen for prostate cancer, mammograms that women will get for breast cancer. You know, there's been a lot of interest in trying to determine whether that would be cost effective and would detect these cancers earlier. And studies so far haven't found a singular test that could help us in that regards. There are certain screening protocols that we utilize for patients who are at high risk for developing pancreas cancer. And at the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute, we definitely see a lot of patients who have genetic syndromes or family members have been diagnosed with pancreas cancer. And we have a very specific algorithm that we employ in those patients that are asymptomatic, don't have cancer, but we follow them very carefully to make sure that if something develops, we catch it early.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Here to discuss the latest research on pancreatic cancer, our director of the Division of Surgical Oncology at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine and director of the Gastrointestinal Center and the Pancreatic Disease Center at the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Syed Ahmad, assistant professor in the UC College of Medicine Department of Radiation Oncology, and a member of the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Jordan Carofa, and assistant professor in the UC College of Medicine, Department of Internal Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology, and a member of the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Anu Gupta. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk to Robin in Wyoming. Hi, Robin. Hi, Robin. Go right ahead.
Hi. Well, I was just calling to ask a question about my son, who's 20 years old. He's a non-drinker who is dealing with some pancreatitis right now, and wondering if you had any advice about where we should go, given that his what kind of testing or, you know, in that direction. He's had MRI that's negative and a CAT scan that's negative, and he had an esophageal ultrasound that was negative except for some inflammation that they said was consistent with acute pancreatitis. But they have no reason that it's not going away, and the doctor in the hospital said that he's never seen anybody present with pancreatitis who didn't have pain. Like, my son has had very little pain. And it kind of comes in, like, it'll start on the right side and it'll go to the left side. And he's in college, you know, back at school dealing with this.
So we have, at University of Cincinnati, we have a pancreas disease center that specializes in patients diagnosed with pancreatitis. We actually have patients coming here from all over the country to be evaluated, and we offer a lot of novel therapeutic and diagnostic options. And so if you call the University of Cincinnati Pancreas Disease Center, we would be happy to evaluate his records and evaluate him as a patient to see whether we can help determine the cause of his pancreatitis. Oftentimes, when someone presents as your son has, there may be an underlying genetic component. That doesn't necessarily mean other people in the family have to have a history of pancreatitis or genes, but sometimes these genes can skip generations and present sporadically in one person or another. We do work with genetic counselors, and we have specific tests that we do to evaluate these patients. But your son's presentation is not unusual. We certainly have seen lots of patients like him who can present with minimal pain but significant amount of disease in the pancreas. And then we have specific treatment algorithms that we employ for patients like him.
Allie in Northside joins us now. Hi, Allie.
Hi. Hello. Can you hear me?
You sure can. Go right ahead.
Okay. So I was curious. My husband is healthy. He's 30 years old. And several, I don't know, like 4 months ago, he went to the doctor. He had a blood screening, like a routine blood screening. And the only thing that was abnormal was that he had elevated bilirubin. So he came back, like, I don't know, 3 months later, and they tested, and it was still kind of high. But his doctor hasn't, done any other tests. At one point, should he push on his doctor to do more testing?
So, again, I'll jump in again. There are lots of syndromes that can cause elevated bilirubin. There's the two that are most common. There's one that's called Gilbert syndrome that can cause an asymptomatically elevated bilirubin. There's another called Krigler-Najjar syndrome. And these are benign diagnoses, but certainly, you know, they need to be excluded as a cause of the etiology. And so, I would specifically ask the doctor, what do you think is the cause of the elevated bilirubin? And I would also advocate for a referral to a gastroenterologist who's probably more equipped to evaluate that abnormality in the lab.
Okay.
Thank you, Allie. We appreciate the call. And Sian, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, if it's there are degrees of elevation, right? Mildly elevated might not be anything all to be concerned about. It's just it depends on how elevated we're talking.
Absolutely. There as with most things, there are degrees of elevation and concern.
Mike in Dayton joins us. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. I had a friend that was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer about a month ago. Last week, he went to the Cleveland Clinic to explore surgery options, and he was told that surgery was not an option because the tumor had already wrapped around an artery and a couple of major blood vessels. So I was wondering in particular, I've heard a little bit about immunotherapy. I know there was a program on that on NPR several months ago. Is immunotherapy potentially an option for treatment? And when is it most effective and when is it not effective at all?
Did you say immunotherapy?
Immuno.
Yeah. Okay.
Immuno.
Mm-hmm.
No, immuno, like
immuno. Oh, okay. We have it misspelled then. Immunotherapy.
Immunotherapy. Okay. So immunotherapy is a very powerful tool that is available to in the treatment of cancers, many different kinds of cancers. As of now, we don't have good data available in how effective immunotherapy is in pancreatic cancer. There are certainly clinical trials that are ongoing trying to look and understand its efficacy and effectiveness in the management of pancreatic cancer. So I would advocate that if your friend has access to clinical trials at Cleveland Clinic or at any center, that he take advantage of that. But outside of a clinical trial, it's not really advocated at this point in the management of pancreatic cancer.
The other thing I'll add is we talked about how pancreatic cancer can present localized or spread, metastatic. There are a group of patients who present where it's localized, but because of the relationship where the pancreas is and the tumor is in it, around the critical blood vessels, they're not able to be resected. That's a really challenging situation. Many times our algorithm here is to use a course of chemotherapy first, our standard chemotherapy, followed by a consideration of radiation therapy to see if there's a good enough tumor response where some of these patients can ultimately have surgery, which is really the curative option.
And I got to say that a subset of patients who have locally advanced cancers like your friend can be downstage and eventually undergo surgery. Now, of course, you know that would be that would need to be evaluated. But again, those patients are definitely types of patients that we treat. We usually try to shrink the tumor with combination of chemotherapy and radiation therapy. Sometimes we enroll them on clinical trials, like Dr. Gupta was saying. And if the patient can be successfully downstage, meaning the tumor can shrink away from the blood vessels, then we can offer them surgery.
Let's talk to Doug and Emilio. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I had a pancreas resection due to tumors that were deemed not cancerous. My question is, what's the outcome out with for people that have non-cancerous pancreatic tumors versus cancerous pancreatic tumors?
Doug, what kind of cancer did you have or tumor did you have? Do you remember the name of it?
I do not. I know it was filled with liquids.
Okay. So you had a cyst in the pancreas, and there are types of cysts that can lead to cancer, and because we know there are cysts that can lead to cancer, sometimes we'll take them out before they become cancer. The main thing with you would be to monitor the rest of your pancreas to make sure those cysts don't reoccur. So your prognosis is excellent. You should have a normal lifespan compared to anyone else walking around, but you still need to make sure that someone is following up on the rest of your pancreas to make sure you don't get other cysts that can be precancerous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. We appreciate the call. And let's talk to Victoria in Goshen. Hi, Victoria.
Hello. I appreciate you taking the call. I had a question because I know that chemo and radiation are very toxic to the body. And it's my understanding that when you have the proper pH level alkaline over 7, that a lot of cancers cannot grow in the body. Is that being used in the pancreatic cancer thing?
Okay. Is there a preventative step like she's talking about?
Not that I'm aware of. There are a lot of websites, and there are some voices that really feel strongly about acidity versus the acid-base relationship in the bloodstream. The reality is, your body actually does have a very tight window of pH, and to date, we don't have good science that tells us that modifying this in any way really helps the problem.
But I do agree with the caller that, you know, the treatment that is available that helps people certainly is not a benign treatment, for lack of a better word. It can be very symptomatic for people to go through the treatments process. And I think what I would say is that, you know, cancer is a disease that is treated by many different specialists. You've got three different specialists here today. And I would say that a good cancer team would work very, very hard to minimize that symptom burden as people are going through their cancer treatment. I know that that is the case at our cancer center, and I imagine that that's probably true for respectable cancer centers around the country.
I was just going to add, you know, a lot of our, if you learn about cancer trials, it's not always the focus on improving disease outcomes. Many times the focus is improving toxicity, and certainly we are doing those kind of trials at UC.
So where's the research headed right now in terms of pancreatic cancer?
That's a great question. So as with many cancers, we're learning that treating it macroscopically is associated with limited results. You know, we used to think if we can just cut it out, you know, patients will be fine. And we know over decades and decades that did not lead to improved success. So over the last decade, the focus has really shifted to understanding the cancer at a cellular level, at the DNA level. And we've done a very good job of understanding pancreas cancer, the genetic abnormalities that occur in pancreas cancer, and specifically developing drugs that target the genetic abnormalities and trying to specifically target specific gene sequences or signaling cascades within the cancer. And that's where the current research is really targeted therapy. That's the buzzword that everyone's using is targeted therapy. And like many cancers, you know, there's a lot of current studies going on looking at specific molecular inhibitors or pathway inhibitors or DNA inhibitors that target specifically that type of pancreas cancer. The other research that's exciting now is really looking at an individual's cancer. As I was saying early, everyone has a different type of pancreas cancer. Everyone has a different genetic sequence. Everyone has a different protein expression. And so now, you know, there's lots of research going on around the country where that patient's pancreas cancer is analyzed, the abnormalities in that patient's cancer is sequenced, and a specific treatment plan is given for that patient.
And, we got one final tweet here. It's from Craig, and he wanted to know if there is a link between Crohn's disease and pancreatic cancer.
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, so no link between Crohn's and pancreatic cancer. Well, Anu, Syed, and Jordan, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks. Director of the Division of Surgical Oncology at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine and Director of the Gastrointestinal Center at the Pancreatic Disease Center at the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Syed Ahmad, Assistant Professor in the UC College of Medicine Department of Radiation Oncology, and a member of the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Jordan Carofa, and Assistant Professor in the UC College of Medicine Department of Internal Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology, and a member of the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Anu Gupta. UC Health will present the Pancreatic Cancer Patient and Caregiver Symposium. That's coming up on February 18th from 1 until 4 in the afternoon at the Cooper Creek Event and Conference Center in Blue Ash. That event is free and open to the public. And also, UC Health is going to offer a complimentary CME event for medical providers, updates in pancreatic cancer. That's also on February 18th. It'll be from 7:30 in the morning until 12:30 in the afternoon at the Cooper Creek Event and Conference Center. And you can find links to more information about both events at WVXU.org. Coming up, Cincinnati is now a sanctuary city. We'll discuss what that means and how it might affect future federal funding. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.